Hello and welcome to Unstructured Ramblings' first interview. We're very privileged to be joined by Lembit Opik. Lembit, how are you?
Not bad, and I feel flattered to be your first subject on the appropriately named Unstructured Ramblings. Thank you for the compliment.
It's only appropriate, Lembit. Now, Lembit, we haven't heard you in the news for some time. What are you up to now?
When I'm doing well, no one wants to report it. People only love it when I fail. So the beginning of my stand-up comedy career, for example, was the subject of great entertainment. But ironically, now that I'm entertaining people, people don't want to report it. What I'm actually doing now is I'm working for the Motorcycle Action Group, MAG, and I'm their Director of Communications and Public Affairs, which is a proper grown-up job with pay and a tie and everything. And what I do is I stand up for riders' rights, for motorcyclists' rights in the UK, and I love it because fundamentally I am a libertarian, and you can't get much more freedom-loving than people who ride what are called technically powered two-wheelers, but you and me, they're bikes and scooters.
Fantastic. Well, it's good to see that you're doing something a bit different now.
Well, it's good to be doing anything. There's a long period of time when I was industriously unemployed, you could say. I couldn't even find a proper job. So it's great doing a job now, which is politically consistent with my interests, but even more importantly, it's something which I really believe in. The important thing, sorry about that, that's the slamming door, as I sit right down next to the president of the Motorcycle Action Group, who sighs relief the fact that we are, to our shame, here at the National Motorcycle Show without a bike or in a car. So don't to our immense relief. That's off the record, obviously.
Of course. Now, Lembit, you were the Member of Parliament for Montgomeryshire from 1997 to 2010, where you lost your seat. And I've heard a few interviews, for instance, when you spoke after Charles Kennedy's death about losing your seat. And I'm wondering how you coped losing.
Losing is not pleasant. I'm not going to lie. To go from hero to zero and to lose everything, including a salary, in a 5-minute election count announcement is tough. It's also quite humiliating in a sense, and I drifted for a couple of years. Initially, you put a brave face on, you pretend you're all right, but you're not. And it's a great leveler. It reminds you that in democracy, the value of your career can go down as well as up, very much like a share scheme. Having said that, in the long term, it does you good. As long as you recognize that it's the right of democracy to get rid of you as well as to elect you, then the bitterness is avoided. And I like to think that I don't carry bitterness about it. I'm also grateful for the 13 years I did have in Parliament. Now, that's a different thing to losing. So the President keeps opening and shutting the door because he just wants to be in on the action. But this is my gap. So I'm going to stick with you here. I've got a little bit of power, but I'm going to exercise it. So for me, the important thing about losing to do it with grace, to accept that the electorate has the right to reject you as well, and to say, that's just how it is sometimes, folks. And you pick up the pieces, even if it takes time, and you get on with the rest of your life.
Of course. Now, the next question is from the president of the Warwick Politics Society, and it's going to be read by Connor, who is my my fellow interviewer. Connor, what was the question?
Yes, Lembit. Hi, Connor here.
Hiya.
This is not my work, I must stress. This is quite
it's going to be a bad question.
Oh, yes, Lembit. You should have known that when you said you'd join the show.
Yeah, I know. There was a clue in the name.
Do you feel personally culpable for the loss of Montgomeryshire, a seat that was very safe for the Liberal Democrats when you inherited it?
Yes. I think there were three reasons I lost. If any one of those three reasons hadn't been there, then I'd have won. Two of them were outside my control. The two that were outside my control were the general political situation. The last time that Labour lost to the Conservatives in the UK, that was 1979, the Liberals lost to the Conservatives in that year as well in my seat. So it was simply a rerun in that sense. Secondly, the demographics have changed. In non-technical language, that means there are lots more Conservatives living there, thousands more than there have been in the past. And then the third one, which I did have control over, was my celebrity profile. I suppose naively I thought people would judge me on my politics rather than who I'm going out with and everything else, but I was wrong. Now, if any one of those three factors hadn't been there, I'd have held my seat. And obviously, because I could have not had a celebrity profile and not gone out with famous pop stars and so forth, I could have held my seat. So I have to say I'm culpable. Would I have changed it? No, because I don't think that I want my life to be run by the media. One thing I would have done different is I would have been much more litigious. I'd have sued the hell out of people who were libelling me, and there were many. Mm. I never lost a press complaint, in fact. But I was naive. I thought that was enough, and it wasn't.
You were a target, it appeared.
I was a target in terms of the Tories wanted to win that seat to form a majority. And I did work hard, but 80 to 90 hours a week doesn't sell itself. You have to be ruthless at promoting your political career.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the media preferred to show other aspects. And it was flattering in a strange way. I'm inherently, would you believe, a little bit shy. So I felt quite flattered that people were interested in all of that. Unfortunately, it was to my cost in the end.
Lambert, is it a seat the Liberal Democrats can win back, do you think?
They can. They came nowhere near it this time. I was blamed for 5 years by the local party for losing. And yet they lost by far more this time around.
Mm.
It's difficult whenever people think there's a quick fix. The problem is those other two factors were still there. And I still had a positive media profile in many ways. And I still did many times better than my successor in 2015. It doesn't make them bad. It just makes it a little bit sad that people took an attitude as they did towards me, which meant they didn't fix underlying issues in the constituency. But that's water under the bridge. The party can win it again, but they have to work pretty hard to do it.
Mm. Right, the next question is on a slightly different topic. It's from Jonathan Mellor, and it's going to be read by my third interviewer, Jack.
Hi, Lambert. This question regards whether there's any interesting stories that we may have heard about, not heard about, when the cameras were off.
Tons. Next question. Some I can tell you, some I can't. I think that the whole thing about cameras being off means people can relax. I can tell you in general terms, one of the best was I really quite like Gordon Brown. And one time I told him a joke and he laughed like he was just a happy bear. Like a big teddy bear. I mean, I really like him. And I think he gets a bad rap.
Are you still in contact?
No, I haven't seen him for a while.
No?
But we always get on well and when we talk to each other and so forth. But as I say, I haven't done that for a while now.
Okay.
I think he's one of those people. I suppose the off-camera story is he's a genuinely decent bloke, huge intellect, very shy, and really principled. And I think he has been shamefully underestimated by the media.
Mm. The next question goes back to the Lib Dems, and it was from Jesse, who is a philosophy student here, and he also writes for The Ball. It's going to be read by Connor.
Lambert, are the Lib Dems under pressure to regain relevance before the Labour Party regains its sense?
A partial, yeah. A 70% yes to that. I try to answer the questions as precisely and as upfront as I can. The problem with that one is I don't agree with the second part of that. The first part is that the Lib Dems are definitely under pressure to regain precedence. Tim Farron's a good friend of mine. We go for a curry a lot of Tuesdays, something we've been doing for about a decade. I've known him for 25 years. And he is a grassroots activist, exactly what the party needs. At the same time, and this is the bit I disagree with the framing of the question about, I think that Jeremy Corbyn is massively underrated. He's a conviction politician. He's the least ambitious person individually that I've met who actually has gone on to lead a party. And I think he's very ambitious for his ideology, and I really respect that.
Mm.
The difficulty is that the press don't like him because he's not one of the old boys. He's not on the inside, and therefore he gets a little massive.
Not media trained.
He's not, well, he is media trained, but he just doesn't feel like he has to be this spiv in braces, clean shaven, up to the minute glasses. It's basically a man who speaks his mind and then does what he feels is right. And I really respect that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not something that our spivvy media respect. And the Tories are only too happy to kick Corbyn when they've got an absolutely ridiculous strategy, in my view, in the Middle East. They'd rather say, well, look at Corbyn, the peacemaker.
Mm.
Ironically, he's probably got more to offer than the others.
Yeah. Well, going back to Tim Farron, Jack has a question now about Tim Farron.
So you endorsed Tim Farron's bid for the Lib Dem leadership, which obviously he won. How would you assess his performance so far?
He's doing what anyone in his position has to do, rebuild slowly, as fast as he can, but that's not quick. It can't be quick. Why not? Because, to be blunt, the party is all sort of a busted flush in terms of its media power, media strength at the moment. Really hard place to recover from. So it's small steps. I think that it takes about 8 months to a year to become an effective leader. I was weak leader of the Welsh Lib Dems, and it had half as many MPs in Wales as the party has altogether in the whole of the UK now. And so therefore he's starting from a very small base. The party has been hugely eroded by Nick Clegg's incompetence as a leader, and therefore it's a long, long way back. But I think he's doing all right. I also think something else, which is that he understands all of this, he accepts it a lot. I'm thinking he would have expected to be inheriting much larger part of the party than he's got. But hey-ho, we take what we're given. He has achieved his ambition of being party leader.
Well, on that, I know you've been openly critical of Nick Clegg when he was the leader, but similarly, you've always liked Tim Farron. You've just spoken then about the curry you've always got on. I was wondering, is there a place for Lembit in the current Lib Dems run by Tim Farron?
I'd do far more work for the Lib Dems. I would be willing to do far more work. I do a lot of broadcasting, that's slightly limiting. I'd be far more willing to go to meetings. I've gone along, sat at the back a little bit more. Because the movement exists. It was the party that was wrecked. And the party was wrecked because of the terrible failings of the leadership, which were rudderless and directionless as a result, and seemed to lack a liberal compass. By contrast, Tim Farron isn't as libertarian as I am, but it's a huge improvement on what we had. And I think that, like me, he came up from the grassroots, he was a councillor, he delivered the leaflets, he earned his seat. And that is all for the good, and that makes me much more optimistic.
Okay, going on current affairs, obviously Syria is in the news at the minute, and there's been some controversies in the Labour Party as to whether they will collectively vote or as to whether they will be given a free whip on the issue. How would you personally vote on Syria?
I would vote against airstrikes in almost all circumstances. I would oppose boots on the ground in almost all circumstances. I would support an effort to try and enter into a negotiated settlement. Very simple reason. I've seen all this before. I was the shadow secretary of state for Northern Ireland for 10 years. I worked with people who had been accused of terrorism, who'd been imprisoned for terrorism, people who hadn't tried to kill people. They had killed people. And as a result, I was in the front line with real heavy-duty terrorists in Northern Ireland. You know what? They're running Northern Ireland better than probably any other part of the UK right now. And I worked with those people, and I learned that terrorists aren't mad on the whole. They're incredibly motivated, and often they act as terrorists because they feel that all other avenues of expression have been exhausted. I think the same is partly true of ISIL. I should also point out that if you look at the genealogy of ISIL, the people who trained a large proportion of ISIL and armed it the Americans in Jordan in 2012. So we have to recognize that the Americans thought ISIL or its precursor was rather handy in trying to get rid of President Assad. We can't just walk away from that responsibility now. But one thing we don't do is try to bomb away our mistakes.
Okay. Going back to you again, Lembit, I know that you stood in Newcastle in 1992 before you were elected, and obviously you've been a local councillor, you've worked your way up. So the next question is from Jack on your parliamentary career.
We were wondering whether you could ever see yourself standing for Parliament again, or on that matter, any other elected position.
Would I stand...
Would you stand for Parliament again?
Yeah, maybe. Not at the moment. Working for the Motorcycle Action Group, as I said before, as Director of Comms and Public Affairs, fulfills my political ambition, and then some, because I'm in an environment which, unlike party politics, isn't about the individual, it's about the cause. And that's what I've always been about. It's an intensely libertarian organisation. It believes in freedom, and it says we have the right to make decisions, even bad ones, as long as they don't harm other people.
That's a far cry from the patronising rubbish we get from politicians so much of the time. And so I can express my libertarianism in a very focused way where we can get real results. Everything from getting motorbikes into bus lanes to stopping silly legislation. I would love to repeal the helmet law, the mandatory helmet law, not because I'm against helmets, but I'm pro-choice. It's my right to decide if I wear a helmet or not. If I don't, and if helmets do a good job, the one individual who gets harmed by that poor decision is me. And I think, therefore, where I am politically now suits me much better than simply spending the next 5 years hankering after a parliamentary seat. I've done that. I've fixed that box. Maybe later, but not now.
Well, you're obviously happy with what you're doing now, and although you haven't ruled out another run for Parliament, you also have a distinguished celebrity career. And Connor has a question about a certain show you're on and whether we can see a... Connor, what would you like to ask?
Lembit, answer me honestly. Who do you think is going to win I'm a Celebrity?
You know what?
Slightly different line, I'm sure you can appreciate.
Last year and the year before, it seemed a bit clearer. I haven't got a good clue this time. And the reason is because there isn't a clear winner. In some ways, I think that there are weaker characters on this occasion than there have been for many years. If there was a Katie Price in there, or if there was someone like...
Lembit Opec.
Or a Lembit Opec, oh yeah. If called upon to serve the country in that entertainment way, I would be there faster than you could say, but just start pushing tickets to Brisbane, but they didn't call me for some weird reason. So as a result of that, I unfortunately have not been given the opportunity. I think Katie Price was about the only person who's been asked to do it twice. So I haven't got a clear view this time. My view is, if they had thought about this very carefully, they might have been a little bit more weird, but some very strong major characters in there. I'll be interested to know what the viewership figures are, because I just don't know about you, but I just don't feel quite the same the way that they put it together this time. I don't know why they've done that. Lots of people would love to do it. It's probably just run out. That's not because I'm avoiding the answers. I don't know. I've never been backward in coming forward whenever I've got a point of view.
So just to confirm, you're not in Australia ready to go on into I'm a Celebrity later on?
Oh, I see, that's what you're saying.
It's a definite no.
No, that's Dick Van Dyke, isn't it? No, Mary Poppins? No, I'm not. But even if I was, I'd tell you I wasn't.
Okay, now we have a message from Peter Jones, who is actually a constituent of yours in Montgomeryshire. He's part of my family, and he wanted to ask whether you can answer this. What do you think of Glyn Davis, who is obviously your replacement, and his expenses claims? I mean, obviously it's been reported that he has claimed £180,000 in expenses whilst public services are being cut. And Pete also says, how dare you leave us with a Tory in here? He's missing you.
But I say to you, Pete, it's your fault, not mine. I voted for myself, I can assure you. And that's the fact, I had a majority of support in the constituency, but my people were less motivated to vote, either because they thought I'd win or because they didn't feel so strongly. The Conservatives had fewer supporters, but they were far more motivated to vote, and so I lost, and I lost fair and square. In terms of the point you make about expenses and Glyn Davis, I haven't really got into that. A lot of the time, MPs have been criticised for using expenses in reality to pay staff, and I've said disingenuous. The other thing is, going into other people's finances, it's like going into someone's bathroom and looking what loo roll they're using. It's just tasteful, really. So I wouldn't attack Glyn on that. Funnily enough, I beat him in 1997 when I first became an MP, and I broke my back in 98 the next year, and he saw me with this great big plaster cast which I had to wear for a long time, and he came up to me and said, it was a paragliding accident, I fell about 100 feet and broke my back in 12 places.
Ooh.
And he said, in a moment of entertainment, I thought it was quite funny, he said, "Ah, Lembit, you were 10 feet short of a by-election." the nasty party. I bumped into, then he beat me, to his surprise as well as mine, in 2010. I bumped into him 2 weeks ago in Parliament. We had a chat, and we had quite a confidential chat. He said things which he was obviously telling me in private, and I respect that privacy as well. He beat me. It's like I said before, he won the game, and in my view, he deserves my cooperation on that, because what am I going to do? Stand outside the tent doing something unmentionable? He's the democratic choice. He's won twice. And he's not a bad bloke, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I've had my bitching sessions about him, but that's because he did beat me on the whole. I don't dislike him at all. Funnily enough, actually, I've asked him to come on to my show. I do a show on BBC Radio Kent, and he said he would. Maybe that says it all.
That'll be interesting. On that, Lembit, do you have any advice for someone who'd consider becoming an MP? So obviously you've been a councillor, you've lost before you're an MP, you've lost in not a Lib Dem hopeful seat in Newcastle. What advice would you give people aspiring to be an MP?
There are three bits of advice which I would give anybody considering a political career. First of all, know what you stand for. Don't go into politics just to be a politician. I just think that's a really bad judgment call. So believe in something, whether you like it or not. Corbyn believes in something. George Galloway believes in something. Charles Kennedy believed in something. So start with your narrative, your core mission. Secondly, start from the ground up. Go and attend meetings, deliver the leaflets, ask if you can help with local by-elections, learn the ropes from the beginning. And then you will carefully learn more and more about politics. And thirdly, the most important thing is never give up. You might not even make it to the top rung, but in the process of being in politics, you make a difference. And there's a great phrase, he who makes a difference to one person makes a difference to the whole world. And I think that's true. And I don't regret a minute of my political career. I'm just very grateful I had the chance.
Lembit, on behalf of everyone at Unstructured Ramblings and at Raw 12:51 AM, thank you so much for joining us and giving up your time to have a quick interview. We really appreciate it.
My apologies if my ramblings were unstructured, but I suppose I've done exactly what it says on the tin.
They were actually very structured for this show, Lembit, so well done. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. If you want me back anytime, just give me a shout. It would be my pleasure to be on again. And thank you for letting me be on the first show.
Thank you very much, Lembit. That means a lot.
Thanks,
you.
Lembit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No problem. All the best, then.